didn't lose it. You know where it is. It's in there.
Hi everyone. Welcome back to We Coach. I have the pleasure of sitting here with Chris Vitarelli from...
I am combining my podcast, Tools for Life, podcast, and I am also from Institute of Integrative Nutrition. That's where I got my certification as a health coach. And we also have Nina Marin.
That's right. Educator, now parenting coach. This is amazing. Chris and I are friends from New York. Chris Delling and I. We're all friends from New York and kindred spirits. And here we are, on this property that I have secured. Just beautiful, really a lifetime dream. It's gorgeous, isn't it?
And we must also, we're going to shout out for Zelig. Praise him for helping him bring us more together, because with him wanting to be here more often, we've also been able to spend more time with one another, I and Nina, in order to build our connection with both of us being Florida residents.
That's right. And both of us coaches now, which is amazing. So let's just jump right in. We decided to do something collaboratively on change and why certain people remain stuck despite wanting desperately to change. Addicts even, me being one of them, a recovered addict. Why change is so difficult. You've got the heroin addict somewhere in the country right now, swearing, leaving his 27th rehab and swearing that this would be the last time and wanting it so desperately, but not being able to achieve that goal of sobriety or long-term sobriety. And so it begs the question, why? I think first of all, we have medicalized addiction. That's the greater problem, I think, is the way that we understand addiction. We sort of blame the addict and don't understand that it's a response, very simply put, a response to human suffering. It's pain that is deeply felt, deeply embedded, and trauma. We're all becoming very trauma-informed. In fact, I did a Zoom meeting today that was about how we get people to become more trauma-informed. So that said, it begs the question, just to reiterate, of why? Why is it so difficult? And we made this transition from New York. That was also very difficult. Now, for my children, because they were raised by a conscious mother who did everything in her power not to create trauma, since I had so much of my own, they transitioned beautifully. There was absolutely no, concern or, difficulty or anxiety, because they felt secure. Me, alternatively, if I was to have done that same thing with my trauma history, it would have been a disaster. It would have been lots of anxiety. So I feel like we're beginning to see a common thread that trauma makes one feel unsafe. Trauma makes one feel fearful. And I would be remiss if I didn't give you a chance to speak to that point right now, Chris.
So, for example, trauma and addiction, for example, I have sugar addictions. It's actually something that I've been very on top of for myself. And also, my father had his drug addictions, where I would constantly judge myself from that. One of my fears connected with trauma and addictions is to be in, for example, in a similar position of having addictions and not taking responsibility, which I understand it's sometimes that is what happens with people that go through addictions. They refuse to take responsibility and mask it with some sort of temporary pleasure or joy. and that would be like my example. I hated every winter, the climate change, fear-based. That's why I would enjoy my summer so much. But here, it's a lot more different than being in Florida, where the season is more like just two seasons.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, you were onto something. Go on.
Yeah, I think really the question is, and I see this a lot in my coaching business with parents. Really, the work is discovering what happened to us and telling our story. I talked about the pain, and that is the underpinning. I mean, as Tara Brach so beautifully, so eloquently puts it, the underpinning to all addiction is shame. So that said, so we know that there's this body of pain, as Eckhart Tolle calls it, the pain body. We know that's the truth of it, right? But then what do we do with that? And we heal that. But how do we heal that? Now, let's just backtrack for a second. The parents that I work with, many of them who have come to me because they are having challenges with their children, do not even understand that they themselves have trauma that is so hidden, that is so buried, that is so unexpressed, that is so beyond their awareness, beyond their consciousness. But you know what they do have, many of them? Addiction. So we have become multiply addicted, not just addicted, but multiply addicted. In fact, we've never seen a time in history where we've got more people multiply addicted to different things. And the correlation is that we're living a very lonely life. We're not living a life where we live together, collaboratively, in tribes, or in Israel, like in the kibbutz, all of us together sharing. And the only thing that truly fulfills us is human connection. That's the only thing that truly fulfills us. So
connection
and unity and feeling wanted. That's right. That's the reason why one of my favorite people in the world, Naomi Aldorf, talks about don't raise your child to be an extraordinary child. Don't raise your child to be special. Ooh, look what you did. No. Raise your child to understand the value in life is being a contributor, is what you can give, being a part of, not I am the star. So Bronx likes to be the star right now, so you don't get to see me for just a brief moment while Bronx does his thing, and he's moved away. There you go. This is how you live life. You let go and you surrender and you accept and things move away. I didn't panic. I didn't that. So it's really about discovery. And then so we discover, but we can only discover in the compassionate presence of another. That's it.
I had a problem trying to find that when I was in New York because it's hard to find compassionate people in New York where there's a lot of fakeness and not genuine, because there's a lot of people one would notice in New York, people that are nice, they're trying to get something out of it.
Superficiality, too.
Yes.
The focus and the emphasis is not on togetherness and healing and understanding and self-discovery. The focus is, more on making money, which, doesn't really fulfill us. It's an empty promise in the end. It's like, what's the promise? You'll make money. But, where is the thing that really fulfills us, which is the truth of it, the connection. And, speaking of truth, going back to the truth of our story, and that's how we heal. We tell our story. That's the long and short of it, is we tell our story over and over in the presence of a person that is compassionate, that can listen, deep listening. So getting back to an earlier idea, so how do parents have better behaved children, better behave, We understand ourselves better. We understand what our blocks are. We understand that sometimes we are acting reflexively, trying to over-control, over-correct, or because of our unprocessed trauma ourselves.
Yes, I take notice on my mother mothering or smothering me, constantly trying to give me attention, when I guess part of that was, that's an example of like one trying to compensate, because I know she grew up without a father, so she would try to put all of that towards me, and I'm trying to tell her, like, I'm trying to develop into my own man. I don't need that much of your attention. If anything, I need a male figure that I can look up to.
So there you see a case of what's called engulfment trauma. because she stifled you so much that you began to become what we call now somewhat socially anorexic, in a sense. That you, not you necessarily, but that could be the extreme side of things, where you become more safe when you're alone, because your existence isn't based on fulfilling someone else's needs. The child needs to feel his needs are being met, not he's being used to fulfill another's needs.
I do enjoy spending time alone. Actually, my family worries sometimes. They're like, Chris is in the house all by himself. Sure, loneliness or isolation does bother me sometimes, but that's actually, like, during the winter, I would want to be alone because I'm going through all this stuff. I don't want anyone to see what's going on. But here, it's different. It's now it's like, I want people to come to the house to go swimming with me. I want to show them some cooking.
Beautiful. And we will get there one day, don't you worry. So I just want to show my viewers, this is a beautiful shirt that my son made for me. It was a beautiful piece of art that I made into a shirt. So, you know, in celebration. So just kind of bringing it back to our topic, which is how do we heal? You know, so here we are left with this problem. And, you know, again, we challenge the model for addiction, blaming the addict, and we start to have radical compassion for that addict, and we start to invite that addict and help that addict to feel safe to tell his story.
I wish I can have this with my father, because this was very difficult. And I'm sorry to bring this up, bringing in a person that this was something that affected me. This was my most recent trauma, because well, after his passing, I went through my own personal things, and it actually made it difficult for me to transition here. But the reason why I guess I bring this up is because this is maybe my most recent, and things that I had to face and go to. And right now, this was probably the most healing part for me, because part of me, and I don't want it to be like a cycle where it just feeds into the same pattern where I become an addict in a way that would sabotage my life. So,
and look what you're doing. You are addressing this. You're in a place of you know, questioning. You're really questioning. You're being curious. And one of the things I want my viewers to do as a homework assignment is go on to the Nonviolent Communications website. Just Google Nonviolent Communications and get that. It's called Feelings List. Tape it onto the fridge. Because you know what trauma survivors do? They go numb. They don't feel. They don't trust. And they need to see a model. They need to sometimes have these feelings and label them in order to label their own.
Write this down as well.
In order to label their own, so that they don't go numb. Yeah, because, you know, you were so kind to send me that podcast that just helped me phenomenally, you know. I opened up to Chris one time and I said, I'm feeling a little depressed today. Right away, you fired off this podcast and sent it to me. And that's what he said. Elliot Holt, yes, for the win. Go look him up. I love how we celebrate each other. And so, you know, he talks about that. Get angry. Get angry. Feel. Depression is numbness. Depression is isolation from self.
It's a cold emotion that just without emotion, just.
Yeah.
As I just did.
Emptiness. Oh, wow. I could actually talk about this all day, but I won't. I will give our readers, our viewers a break and say that I am looking forward to many more discussions with you and many more collaborations. And I guess I recommend that, you know, each of us, along with the Nonviolent Communications Feeling List, that we just begin to tune in. Something that I'm doing that's very powerful in my own practice is when I wake up in the morning, I am inviting whatever part of myself needs to express itself. You know, just a gentle, loving invitation. Our dream life is where a lot of pain comes up, and then we don't even know it. We just spring into busyness.
Yes, for me, my part of healing that I need is I have a lack of connection. Since I've moved here, I do very well when I'm with people, hence why part of it was to coming down here into Tampa to meet Renina. I'm not very much into texting. I would prefer phone calls or voice notes, but if I do that, it's to meet the person so that we can have some sort of activities, like we went out to eat, and we went to Aldi's, and I even got to hang out with Bronx since I missed Leo back in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. Connection is everything. It really is. And connection to self, and, you know, just being witness. You know, there were several things that Chris shared with me over sushi, and the fact that I was just this deep listener, you know, just this empathic person that could really hear and be with him, and, you know, no judgment, no feedback, no criticism, just simply, I get it, I understand, you know, if we could just experience that level of safety with each other, we wouldn't need all the addiction, we wouldn't need all the escaping, and we wouldn't need to retreat into a world of loneliness, to a world of feeling safe because we're alone, you know, we'd have each other. So I'm just so grateful that we are on this path together, on this journey together. On that note,
together instead of hiding.
That's right. Better together. We say better together, but very few of us really know how to take actionable steps to get there. And that's what we coach is about. It's about actionable steps for a better life. All right. We are signing off. Until next time, I thank you all, and I look forward to much, much more. Bye for now.
Stay tuned for more.
What'd you think? Love it? I loved it. I thought it was...
I like how you were able to take control of the entire portion. Like, you were being the interviewer. And I remember being so laid back sometimes. Maybe now, since I've been here, I've just been more laid back.
Oh gosh, you're not gonna believe what we missed. Jacob was walking back from the bus. That's okay. This is work. Thank you.